Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Good morning and welcome to Creating Families, the show where we talk about the many ways we plan, create, and live in families of all kinds. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Schrouder, and today we're going to focus on the planning and the creating parts, which we haven't talked about in a little while, so I'm particularly excited about today's show, and you'll see why. When I started my journey to become a parent several years ago, there were four things that I knew. Number one, I wanted to be pregnant. Number two, I wanted a known donor, which was no small feat. Number three was I wanted to inseminate at home. Both of those things made a lot of eyebrows go up. And number four, I wanted to have a midwife. Now, years ago, so this was 2006, I started this journey. I had no role models for known donorship or home insemination. I was kind of on my own trying to figure all this out. But I found an amazing book called The New Essential Guide to Lesbian Conception, Pregnancy, and Birth, written by the founder of Maya Midwifery, and it changed my life. It gave me a lot of tools. I found Maya Midwifery online. They had some tools online that I was able to use, and it really helped me to know my body better and get going. So I am so, so pleased to have Kristen Colley with me today. She's the owner of Maya Midwifery. She's a licensed midwife and a certified professional midwife. She is a talented and insightful guide for those who are in the process of welcoming a baby. She's the owner of My Midwifery and Fertility Services, as I mentioned, which is an internationally renowned for its queer family-building expertise and midwifery model approach to fertility. Kristen provides preconception care, home insemination, and midwifery services in Seattle, Washington. So if you're in that area, you're in luck, as well as fertility consultations via the Internet. So if you're anywhere, you're also in luck. Over the course of her career, Kristen has assisted nearly 1,000 people on their way to becoming parents. That's awesome. She's an authoritative resource on LGBTQ conception and pregnancy, single parenting by choice, functional fertility, and a variety of topics related to insemination, intentional family building, LGBT cultural sensitivity, and midwifery model preconception care. Wow, I wish I had found you in 2006. Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
There's so many things that I'm excited to talk to you about today, but I think what I'd like to start with, in case, you know, midwifery is not always a well-known option for people who are planning to be pregnant or are already pregnant and looking for prenatal care. So I know a lot of people just automatically go the OB route because that's what they know. So can we start by, can you just share, you know, what does a midwife do and how is it different from an OBGYN?
Great question. So midwives care for people in a normal course of pregnancy, birth, and the early postpartum period. Sometimes the easiest way to describe it is to say that midwives do the same thing that OBGYNs do, they just do it differently. So it's a different model of care, but a similar level of care provider when it comes to normal, healthy pregnancy. Pregnancies that are complicated by, you know, one condition or another are more appropriate in OBGYN care, but around the world, midwives are the most common entry-level provider for people during pregnancy. And, of course, laws and regulations and such vary from country to country. But sometimes people get confused about the difference between a midwife and a doula, knowing that doulas and midwives kind of do the natural birth thing. And doulas are not clinical care providers. They provide physical and emotional support during labor, where midwives are clinical care providers and do prenatal care, birth birth and postpartum, and some midwives also do preconception care.
Great, which I didn't know about. I wish I had known about that.
Well, I am guessing that it's because you are a Canadian, yes?
Yes, I am Canadian.
Yes, so...
all us Canucks.
Yeah, the Canadian healthcare system does not provide for midwives to provide preconception care.
Mm-hmm.
So because midwives are paid by the national healthcare system, they're limited to what the national healthcare system says their scope of care is. So that's the big difference, where in the states, the laws around midwifery are different from state to state. Some states allow for it, some don't, and some are just simply gray areas, because preconception care is a little bit of a nebulous gray area and not something that gets a lot of attention like prenatal care does, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And I know the beauty in Canada, and I'm not sure how it works in the states, so you can fill us in, is that midwives in Ontario, anyways, are covered by our provincial health insurance. So
right.
It's free.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. So I got an amazing level of care, really great attention, and I didn't have to pay for it. So
right.
That was a bonus for me.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. So there's so many things I want to ask you. So you said some people might want to consider the OB route for certain reasons. So who is a good candidate, for lack of a better word, for considering a midwife for their preconception and prenatal care?
From my perspective, a midwife can provide preconception care for just about anyone, because even if someone has health considerations, the medical model just doesn't provide for a holistic approach. So let's say there's someone who has hypertension that's managed by medication, and so they know that they need to see an OBGYN for their pregnancy care. They're in the process of trying to get pregnant. A midwife is going to be able to work with them around nutrition, overall underlying health, and especially for families that are conceiving with donor sperm, there are all sorts of aspects involved with that that the medical model just doesn't have time or space to really get into that with people. So when you described your situation of wanting to work with a known donor, a lot of medical providers would run screaming, because you're sharing fluids with somebody who's not your partner, and there's regulations about that and so forth, where a midwife might, because midwifery care is all done from a place of informed choice. If somebody comes to me saying they want to use a known donor, I'm going to say, okay, let's talk about that. Here are your health risks. Here are your legal risks. Here are your, social familial risks.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put all that out on the table and make sure that you understand it all. And by the way, I can meet with your donor on your behalf or along with you to talk about things like safer sex practices and really get everybody on the same page about what risks they're willing to agree to, what risks they're not willing to agree to. And as a matter of fact, before we do any of that, let's make sure that this person is fertile, who you're going to use as your sperm source. So,
good point.
Yeah, so it's a full, it's a model of empowerment and personal choice, understanding that individuals are perfectly capable of making decisions about their health and about their bodies, and that just because you're using someone as a known donor, and then therefore you're involved in the healthcare system, all of a sudden you have to meet these rules and regulations and are prohibited from certain levels of care, when you could just go out to a bar and have sex with somebody and no one would have anything to say about it, and it's hugely risky. So I'd much rather have you in healthcare and be able to have these conversations.
Right. It's funny, I had to go undercover because I went to a fertility clinic for monitoring, not for the insemination or anything like that, but, I couldn't tell anybody that I was a lesbian and that I had a known donor. We had to pretend we were a couple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And then you can have all those conversations about, we had to have all those other conversations on our own. So I'm hearing you say you can have conversations on someone's behalf with a known donor about safer sex practices. I don't know if you still do, but at the time you had a questionnaire on your website about sexual health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, still there. I've revised it a little bit.
It's still there. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really helpful to me, but it was really difficult to have that conversation. In fact, I don't even think we had a conversation. That person didn't work out, but I think I just sort of said, here, read this.
Uh-huh.
Go through this, and then we'll talk. And I was so embarrassed and so uncomfortable. And that particular donor didn't work out, so we didn't proceed. But what an amazing opportunity to have someone, a neutral third party, have that conversation with the donor, because it's important,
yeah.
Right?
It's yeah, a neutral third party and a neutral third party who's knowledgeable about mm-hmm. what the risks are and experience and being able to have these conversations with people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I picked up on something else in what you said, and that's that you said you were going to the clinic to be monitored.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's another thing that when your system of healthcare is built around needing to go to a fertility clinic in order to conceive, and that's what people in the community are doing, mm-hmm. it's kind of taken for granted that, oh, this is what you do. You go into
right.
the clinic, you're monitored, and this is how it goes, when in actuality, I would tell you, if you're getting pregnant with a known donor, your chances are a lot better either inseminating at home on your own. There are legal risks involved with that. I'm going to talk mm-hmm. to you about it. And, again, in the States, that's different state to state. But I'm also going to talk to you about the ways that your body tells you that it's fertile and,
right.
therefore, how to time your inseminations in a way that is in alignment with your actual ovulation rather than a statistical prediction based on people, a population that may or may not be your age. In other words, this idea that ovulation happens 36 hours after an LH surge, and there are some different ways to either detect or artificially make that LH surge happen,
mm-hmm.
but that 36-hour time lag is not true in everybody, and I often see people who have been inseminating in a clinic, and they come to me, and I have them start charting, and we realize that actually all of the inseminations have been late, and
wow.
the egg is no longer viable by the time the insemination has happened, and we change things up, and they get pregnant.
Wow. Well, you know, I read that in the notes that you sent me prior to chatting today, and my experience was that I got pregnant very quickly,
mm-hmm.
Like in the second round of trying when I was going to the clinic, and then had a miscarriage. And so I took a few months off, and then I went back. And then it just got a little ridiculous to me, and I thought, you know what, I can, just like what you said, I can do this myself, right? And I had, you know, the book, and I had the, you know, some of the guides in the book, and I was taking my temperature and doing all the things that you're supposed to do. And I bought an ovulation kit at the pharmacy. But and I got pregnant on my own. I stopped going to the clinic and you know, got pregnant just by doing all of those things on my own. I had a little fertility lens that looks like a lipstick case where you put your saliva on and the ferns show up
mm-hmm.
and you're ovulating. And that felt really empowering to me. It felt really good. And I thought, wow, you know, if I had known how my body worked earlier, my whole life would have been different,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so I really appreciated all the information and that I was able to gather, both through the New Essential Guide to Lesbian Conception, Pregnancy, and Birth, but also from the My Midwifery website, and just learning about how my body worked and paying attention to those signs, and it worked.
mm-hmm. Yeah, so, there's the fact that it worked, but. I have so many people who when I teach them about how to find those signs and they realize what their body's actually doing every month,
mm-hmm.
I get these like wide-eyed, oh my gosh, you mean
yeah.
this has been happening all these years and I have no idea? And there's even a little bit of like angst about why didn't they teach me this? Why isn't
yeah.
this taught in school? It's basic biology.
So important. You know,
yeah.
we learn, I mean, I don't even think we learned about our periods when I was in school.
Mm.
We had a very brief conversation in grade 6, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know when I was a teacher of grade 5, we talked about puberty and your body changing and again, menstruation and all that stuff, but we never talked about, like, the body is an amazing thing.
Yeah.
You know, you can only get pregnant in a very small window, and I think, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's easy for women to be paranoid about getting pregnant, on the flip side, right? Sometimes we're paranoid about getting pregnant because we don't know how our body works, and then we're trying to get pregnant and we don't know how our body works.
Mm-hmm.
Both frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
And so unnecessary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Incredible. So I want to switch gears a little bit and talk to you about just Maya midwifery and the model that you use and the focus on LGBT families and care, because I noticed on your website that's the first category of you know, who do we serve. So you have LGBT families, you have older parents, single parents, genderqueer and trans parents, and then heterosexual parents, and then poly families. So I'm curious about that commitment to LGBT, to the LGBTQ community. Was it always like that? How did that evolve? Can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yes, it was always like that. The practice was founded in the early 90s in the San Francisco Bay Area and was designed to serve the needs of lesbians who were getting pregnant with donor sperm. And in the process of learning how to do that, the founders became experts in fertility. Mm-hmm. And that expertise, of course, will serve anyone who's trying to conceive in any way that they're trying to conceive. So that's why the population served is really everybody.
Right.
And when someone is conceiving with donor sperm, the needs are very specific and not addressed in a way that really meets all of those needs in the standard healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I can, of course, speak most knowledgeably about the system here in the United States. So this may or may not translate to Canada in some ways.
And other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm. So here in the States, you might go to your primary care provider, your doctor or nurse practitioner, and say, I'm trying to get pregnant. What test should I do? They're going to run some baseline health tests. They might make sure that you're immune to chickenpox and rubella, and if not, offer you a vaccination. They might check your iron. There may be some tests that would give a clue as to underlying endocrine function that might be overlooked, such as thyroid-stimulating hormone. We know in the fertility world that when the thyroid is off, the rest of the endocrine system is off. And in a standard medical visit, the TSH may or may not be checked. And if it is checked, the range of normal is quite broad and much wider than the range of normal that's used in fertility clinics where that expertise exists.
Right.
So you might go and spend thousands of dollars on sperm, not realizing that actually you're subfertile because your thyroid is off, just as one example. You might alternatively think, well, I'm not just going to go to my regular doctor because they didn't seem to really know or whatever. I'm going to go to a fertility clinic. I'm going to go right to the top. Well, a fertility clinic is designed for people who are infertile.
Right.
So the entire approach is looking for what might be wrong. And, yes, they're going to do more in-depth testing that's specific to fertility, but they may overlook all the other aspects that are involved when you are inseminating with donor sperm. So we already talked about some of the aspects of using a known donor, but when you're using frozen sperm from a bank and you're going through that process of what bank do we use and why, what donor do we choose and why, what makes sense for our family in terms of if you have a same-sex cisgender female couple, who should conceive and why?
Mm-hmm.
Not just based on the medical numbers, but based on your feelings about it. Some couples aren't even in agreement about whether or not they should use a known donor or a bank.
Right.
So there's a ton of different aspects of the family building process that aren't taken into account. And in general, if it's a system of health care that's designed around heterosexual people having sex to get pregnant,
mm-hmm.
then the general protocol is, okay, let's do this, try for 6 months, and if it doesn't work, then we'll do something else.
Right.
So that trying for 6 months could break the bank for a lot of families.
Yeah.
Because frozen donor sperm is so expensive.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the midwifery model, in the way that we provide care, it's taking all of this into consideration, and especially for queer families, it's a model of care where they are the normal routine family that's coming in, rather than, oh gosh, these people don't really know what to do with us.
We can't tell them who we are, really.
Yeah, then there's that.
Which is another layer of being invisible.
Yes.
Okay, well, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to continue this conversation after a few messages. If you're listening, this is Creating Families Radio. I'm speaking with Kristen Colley. She's the owner of Maya Midwifery and Fertility Services in Washington. And we'll be right back after a short break. Stay with us.
As a child care center, you have unique responsibilities when it comes to diversity and making all children and families count. Anne Marie Schrouder has been a diversity inclusion consultant for over 10 years, and she wants to help. She has created a complimentary forum where you can come together, share challenges and successes, and get helpful information and ideas to create an inclusive, happy, thriving child care environment that values diversity. Sign up now. Go to creatingfamiliesradio.com and follow the instructions on the forum's page.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best Earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. EarthChannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now. So come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 1-800-849-8978. That's 1-800-849-8978.
Get the transformational power of inclusion at your company. Inclusive work environments increase market reach and improve customer service to bring in and keep more clients, which means more satisfied clients, employees, and wait for it, more profit. A win-win-win situation. Not sure what an inclusive work environment is? Get a free 20-minute consultation call at 416-910-8653. Visit creatingfamiliesradio.com. Your company will benefit. Call 416-910-8653 now.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Creating Families. I'm Anne Marie Schrouder, and we're talking about planning and creating families today with Kristen Colley from Maya Midwifery and Fertility Services. So, Kristen, before the break, we started talking a little bit about what you are up to over there at Maya Midwifery and Fertility, and you talked a little bit about some of the challenges that specifically LGBT prospective parents face in the regular medical system, be it at a regular healthcare provider or at a fertility clinic. That's not really designed for us, right? Not really designed for our specific ways of creating families. So what does it look like when somebody comes into your clinic? Is that what you call it, a clinic?
Sure, or office,
yeah.
Either way.
An office. From the LGBTQ communities, and they're either thinking about it or they're actually starting. What does it look like? What's different about how you work?
For people who come into my physical office, the first thing is that the space is very comfortable and feels very non-medicalized. In fact, just yesterday somebody looked around and said, where's all your medical equipment? It's kind of hidden away. And the other thing is people notice that we belong here. Like, this is not, there aren't pictures of white heterosexual couples on the walls, that it's very much a queer-focused space.
Great. And can I just interrupt you for a second? Because we're using the word queer, and not everywhere in the world is the word queer seen in a positive light. So I just want to remind people that on this show, when we use the word queer, much like in many LGBTQ communities, it's a positive word, and we're sort of reclaiming the word and using it as self-identification. So I just wanted to, sorry for interrupting you, but I just wanted to say that because I know for some people that might be like, ah, that word. So carry on.
Yes. Yeah. Here, you know, it's geographical and it's also, you know, generational, the use of that word. And
absolutely.
I tend to use it as a person in my early 40s in the Pacific Northwest, and it's more of an umbrella term. So, yes. And,
yeah, and similarly, I think we use it more in Canada than generally in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
That's been my experience. But
yeah. Yeah, so regardless of whether someone's in my physical office or I'm providing an online consultation, what the care looks like is when I first meet with somebody, it's an hour and a half. We are going through a full health history. I have people do a 3-day diet history before they come in. Any lab work that they've had done in the past 6 months, I have them bring that. If they've been trying and they've been charting, I have them bring their charts or of course, email if we're working online. Mm-hmm. And I really get a picture of who a person is, and through the health history questions, I'm able to assess their underlying state of fertility. And sometimes there's need for further lab work. I'm doing informed choice about any lab work that's to be done. For instance, in a clinic, you would typically just, if you're over 35, be offered a bunch of hormonal testing. I'm going to talk to you about what that testing might mean, what you might do with the information, reasons to get it, reasons not to get it,
and,
you know, letting you decide what you want to do. People leave that appointment with a fertility enhancement plan that is individually designed for them, that works with their life, that's well thought out, and they're also leaving with an insemination timing plan or instructions for how to chart their cycle, and then we will then determine the insemination timing plan based on how their body displays its fertile signs. And because it takes a full month for someone to chart a cycle and to get, you know, one snapshot of a fertile cycle, I provide follow-up care for 3 months with every appointment. So the care is kind of done in 3-month cycles. And if you're not pregnant after 3 months, then we want to meet again and, you know, look at why. How is the timing? Is there anything else you need to add or shift in terms of how you're caring for your body? Because we don't want to go on forever, you know, spending endless amounts of money on sperm if there's something that needs to shift. So that's the general course of preconception care. And if people are here locally in Seattle, then there are support groups. I have one called the Queer Conception Support Group. I do support groups for single parents by choice from time to time. I teach childbirth ed classes for LGBTQ families. And, you know, there are other events around town that I'm involved in producing. So there's more available locally, and the preconception care is available online.
Awesome. Okay. So can you tell me a little bit about some of the you talked about sort of their underlying state of fertility. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that contribute to our underlying state of fertility?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it could be simple things that would turn up on a lab test, like if you're anemic, then the oxygen carrying capacity of the blood is too low, and so the nourishment that's provided by the uterine lining might not be substantial enough to maintain a pregnancy. So, you know, that's an easy, straightforward one that we can do with a lab test.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's a little bit more difficult to measure without really looking at the pattern of your food intake is blood sugar regulation. So in the female body, we typically, the cisgender female body, we typically need to eat some form of protein about every 3 hours in order to maintain stable blood sugar. And when people go longer than that, they tend to crave sweets either between meals, or what I commonly see is when people go either a long time in the morning between breakfast and lunch, then I'm seeing either cookies, candy, potato chips, you know, simple carbs in the mid-afternoon.
Yeah.
And for some people, those simple carb cravings are happening anyway, even if they did eat a decent breakfast and lunch, because it's 3 hours after lunch and you're not going to have dinner again for another 3 hours. And when that kind of pattern is happening, I also see waking in the middle of the night around 2 or 3 a.m. And how this ties in with fertility is when you've gone too long without protein and you're getting a little low blood sugar, the adrenals kick in. And that adrenaline response will release glucose into your bloodstream so that your cells can use it, but it's also very taxing on the body. And in order for that adrenaline response to happen, you need a hormone called cortisol. And when your cortisol is constantly being used up in order to make an adrenaline response happen, then it takes progesterone from the reproductive system, uses it in place of cortisol, and progesterone is the hormone that you need to sustain pregnancy. So progesterone levels go down. There's also some liver involvement, and the liver is responsible for converting your body's testosterone into estrogen. So if the liver is having to constantly store excess glucose or release glucose into the bloodstream in times of low blood sugar, then it has less energy available for converting your testosterone to estrogen. So then that would equate to less ample egg development, less fertile mucus, a weaker ovulation pattern. So just by looking at the reason I do a 3-day diet history is I'm not only looking at what a person eats, but how they eat and what that rhythm looks like, and getting a really good picture of the day-to-day blood sugar regulation in the body.
Wow. See, I learned more in the last few minutes than I did in like 2 years of trying to get pregnant. Wow. Okay.
Your wistful sighs.
I'm
sorry that it's wistful, but I'm just like, yeah, people need to know this, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I saw a naturopath, so I got some of this information, but I'm just thinking how amazing it would be for someone, you know, whether they're calling you from anywhere in the world or Skyping or whatever, however you do your sessions, or coming in to see you in person, to have all that information in one spot, right? Because I was going to the naturopath, I was also seeing an acupuncturist, and I was going to the fertility clinic where, you know, they wanted to put me on drugs, right, because my progesterone levels were low. And then when I stopped going and I started to see a naturopath, we did a lot of the healthy boosting, but it was a fractured experience. Okay, well, we need to go for a break, and we'll talk more when we come back about healthy fertility. I'm speaking with Kristen Colley from Maya Midwifery and Fertility Services in Washington. We'll be right back after a short break. I hope you stay with us.
Get the transformational power of inclusion at your company. Inclusive work environments increase market reach and improve customer service to bring in and keep more clients, which means more satisfied clients, employees, and wait for it, more profit. A win-win-win situation. Not sure what an inclusive work environment is? Get a free 20-minute consultation call at 416-910-8653. Visit creatingfamiliesradio.com. Your company will benefit. Call 416-910-8653 now.
See straight and save. These days, everyone seems to see things differently. But from your eyes, you can see straight and save. Right now, get glasses online at 70% off at Glasses USA. There's a 100% guarantee, too, on top brand men, women, multifocal, and even prescription sunglasses. Visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Glasses USA, and you will see straight and save.
As a child care center, you have unique responsibilities when it comes to diversity and making all children and families count. Anne-Marie Schrader has been a diversity inclusion consultant for over 10 years, and she wants to help. She has created a complimentary forum where you can come together, share challenges and successes, and get helpful information and ideas to create an inclusive, happy, thriving child care environment that values diversity. Sign up now. Go to creatingfamiliesradio.com and follow the instructions on the forum's page.
Okay, so you have a couple of days off, and you're planning to get away from stress. You may be planning to go across the world or even taking a staycation around town. Well, Hotels.com can get you a room in over 158,000 hotels, 60 countries, for 50% off. That's reducing stress already. Plus, collect 10 nights, and you'll get one night free. And there's no cancellation charges, no change fees. For the best deals, even last-minute deals, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Hotels.com.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Creating Families. I'm Anne-Marie Schrader, and we're talking about planning and creating families today with Kristen Colley from Maya Midwifery and Fertility Services, which you can access from anywhere in the world via phone or Skype. So we've been talking before the break about our underlying state of fertility, and I want to switch gears a little bit to the concept of age, because I know that when I was trying to get pregnant, I was already in my 40s. So, everything told me, my chances are lower. And that was one of the reasons why my partner said, you need to see an OB. And, I, in no uncertain terms, told her, not your body, I'm seeing a midwife. So, which I'm, was very pleased about. So can we talk a little bit about, what you're seeing with people over 40 that come into your office? And they're, what they're doing, and they're, you have different success rates based
yes,
on what
I
we've
do.
Chatted about before, which is exciting to hear, so.
Yes. So the majority of the people who come to see me are over age 35. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't get people who are under 35, I absolutely do. Every now and then I even get somebody in their 20s. But the majority of my clientele are of, quote, advanced maternal age, which is a horrible medical term that I actually don't ever use directly with my clients. And I do serve quite a few people over age 40. And what we have found, and this is true of my predecessor, the founder of the practice, as well as has been true during my tenure here, which is about 11 years now, about 11 years. Our success rate is about 33% for people over 40 conceiving with their own eggs. And that's
wow.
An overall success rate, not a per-cycle success rate.
Mm-hmm.
The per-cycle success rate that is quoted by the American Society for Reproductive Medicine, I am not sure what the Canadian equivalent is, but it's our professional, overarching professional association for medical care providers around fertility. They quote a 5% success rate per cycle for people over 40 years old.
Wow.
And that number goes down for each increasing year of age.
Right.
So,
wow.
You walk into the doctor's office and the stats are bleak, and so you are kind of told, all right, we've got to, test you to see how well you're going to respond to fertility medications, and we've got to get on this and medicate you and, do it as a very medicalized thing from the get-go. And there's not this pause where we look at, okay, what's the underlying health in the body?
Mm-hmm.
Because the goal is not just to conceive, the goal is to carry a healthy pregnancy.
Right.
And we already know that people in their 40s are at increased risk of complications during their pregnancy.
Yeah.
So from my perspective, this population of people, who are a little bit older are really truly in need of preconception care. Like, this is the population that we need to build health prior to conception, not just so that conception can happen, but so that the pregnancy can be healthy and be carried all the way to term.
Right.
So, you know, when somebody comes in and they say, well, I'm 40, I'm 41, this is what my doctor told me, and do you have anything else to say? I say, absolutely. From my perspective, yes, age is a factor. You know, you've lived on the planet for X number of years. There's a lot of pollution around. You've already ovulated a lot of your eggs. And we know that there's a certain percentage of the cause of miscarriage that doesn't have to do with the age of your eggs, but actually has to do with underlying hormonal issues. And that's what we can control. We know that as the body enters that, you know, pre-perimenopausal stage, that things like thyroid function are more likely to be affected by lifestyle factors. And I imagine that it's a combination of the fact that you're getting closer to menopause and that anything that has been a stress on the body just has a cumulative effect. So let's say you have a really stressful job. There's a lot of adrenal stress that's been happening for over a decade now, a lot of, you know, eight-hour periods of time with no food because, you know, you're working, whatever your life looks like, a lot of cocktails after work or whatever, you know. That's something that when you're in your 20s is not going to have a huge effect on your fertility. But by the time you're in your late 30s and certainly your early 40s, the body's going to really be affected by that. So let's talk about that. And I think what makes the difference for the success rates in my practice is that we are addressing those things. So even if someone ends up working with me simultaneously with doing medication in a clinic, they have the advantage of being able to have those lifestyle factors addressed and entering the process of even medicalized infertility, being more likely to be successful, and then, of course, successful pregnancy following.
Right. So interesting, because what I, you know, my thought is, and you can correct me if I'm off, is that in a medical model, because of our advanced, what did you call it? Maternal
advanced
age.
Maternal age. I hate to say it.
Because of our advanced maternal age, one of the things that we talk about in a fertility clinic, say, would be taking medication to increase the amount of follicles that are produced, right? Is that the right word, follicles? And so you have a better chance of one of them being fertilized in a cycle, which involves drugs, which is hard on your body. And what you're saying is that there's other ways to, and then we might get pregnant and we might not be able to carry to term because our body is, we're not addressing those underlying health issues. So what you're saying is that you look at the bigger picture, even with someone in their 40s that are considering pregnancy, and so they can not only make their body healthy to get pregnant, but they keep their body healthy during the pregnancy to be able to carry to term.
Exactly.
Awesome. Amazing. And people can work with you in tandem with, like, if they're going through the medical model, can they also, like, how does that, they're going to a fertility clinic, say, because you mentioned something about simultaneously, can they work with you at the same time?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I love it when people are working with me at the same time that they're working with a medical model, because it means that, you know, for one reason or another, they're in the clinic either by choice or by necessity, but it doesn't mean that then they're only relegated to that model of care. They actually get a full spectrum of care because I'm working with them around, you know, if they're conceiving by insemination, then I am working with them around timing that works for their body and then the underlying health pieces as well. And, you know, I have to say that I do give a fair amount of just sheer support for people who are going through the process. So I think that all of that makes a difference.
Which is huge. Okay, well, we're going to take a break again, and when we come back, if you're a midwife who's listening, Kristen does education for midwives, so have no fear. And there's also workshops that you can participate in, one of which is going to be coming up in Toronto, where I am. So, yeah, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Creating Families Radio, and we'll be right back.
As a child care center, you have unique responsibilities when it comes to diversity and making all children and families count. Anne Marie Schrouder has been a diversity inclusion consultant for over 10 years, and she wants to help. She has created a complimentary forum where you can come together, share challenges and successes, and get helpful information and ideas to create an inclusive, happy, thriving child care environment that values diversity. Sign up now. Go to creatingfamiliesradio.com and follow the instructions on the forum's page.
Shh! Over here. Here's a secret for a virus-free computer. ESET. They've been a pioneer in the antivirus industry for over 25 years. 25 years of innovative, top-rated antivirus protection. ESET's award-winning security solutions provide a safe online experience for over 100 million home and business computer owners. They are so affordable, fast, and simple to use. So be gone, you blue screen of death. ESET's on my computer. If it's not on yours, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ESET now.
Get the transformational power of inclusion at your company. Inclusive work environments increase market reach and improve customer service to bring in and keep more clients, which means more satisfied clients, employees, and wait for it, more profit. A win-win-win situation. Not sure what an inclusive work environment is? Get a free 20-minute consultation call at 416-910-8653. Visit creatingfamiliesradio.com. Your company will benefit. Call 416-910-8653 now.
What does HealthyLife.net and Amazon.com have in common? Well, they're both available on the Internet. They both give great value. But most important, most of our positive program hosts and guests are accomplished authors, and their books are available from, you got it, Amazon.com. Now, it even gets better than that, because when you're listening on air to a HealthyLife.net host or guest, you can go directly to Amazon.com, and you can order your book while you're still listening to your favorite HealthyLife.net program. So when you hear an author you like, go to the homepage of HealthyLife.net and click on Amazon.com.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Back to Creating Families. I'm Anne-Marie Schrouder. I'm speaking with Kristen Colley of Maya Midwifery and Fertility Services. It's been a fascinating interview. I'm so excited by the work that you're doing for LGBTQ communities. And we just talked about women in their 40s who are wanting to conceive. But you also have a fairly committed agenda, maybe isn't the right word, to help build capacity among midwives. So tell me about that work that you're doing.
Sure. So the work that I do around fertility is very specialized, and I guess the best way to describe it is that all midwives have the ability to provide basic preconception care. We're all trained in how to do a physical exam, basic lab work that would be applicable, you know, health-building practices, nutrition analysis, that sort of thing. What's specialized is working with families who are conceiving via donor insemination.
Okay.
For people who are inseminating using frozen sperm from a bank, you will double your chances by doing intrauterine insemination, and that's where a small catheter is passed through the cervix and the sperm sample is placed directly inside the uterus rather than placing it vaginally. And every midwife also has the skills to be able to do IUI, whether or not they were actually shown that particular procedure in their training. It's a, you know, A plus B equals C. You know how to, you know the anatomy, you know how to do a speculum exam, therefore you can easily do an IUI.
Okay.
So IUI procedure is something that's very, very easy to learn for a midwife and can easily be provided at home. It's a low-tech procedure. Mm-hmm. There's no reason or need for it to be done in a clinic. However, all of the background information, the really in-depth fertility information that is going to be, from my perspective, pertinent and necessary for someone who's spending that amount of money on their donor sperm, or even if they're working with a known donor, you know, there's a lot of commitment involved on everyone's part.
So
that information is not included in standard midwifery training, nor is the very precise information that's needed for timing using frozen donor sperm. So there are a small handful of midwives who have either self-educated, well, really self-educated, and it's not a very widespread part of midwifery practice. Mm. However, I've been contacted by midwives over the years saying, you know, how can I be involved? How can I learn this? And so I've put together an education course where I currently have about, I think, 8 or 9 students around the U.S. I don't have anyone in Canada at this point, who are going through a 9-month training program that I've designed to really teach people all of the aspects that are needed to be able to provide this level of care. And my goal is to have a midwife in every major city providing full preconception care for families who are conceiving via donor insemination. In terms of Canadian midwifery, I'm not quite sure how that would look because Canadian midwives are very well paid by the National Health Service and probably, and Canadian families are accustomed to getting their health care, you know, for free, as you said. So with it not being in the scope of midwifery care in Canada, I'm not quite sure that that's feasible, although right. Wouldn't be unusual. I definitely have had Canadian midwives who have come and trained with me for short periods of time.
Hmm. Okay, and that's a 9-month course, and it starts every year in January. So if anybody's interested, they would contact you, but they wouldn't start until next year. Is that correct?
You know, that's evolving because I keep having more people saying, gosh, can I get in even though it started a month ago? So I'm wondering, gosh, maybe I need to start another session in the summer and wouldn't be opposed to that. So, yes, go to the website, you know, stay posted. If I continue to get people filing in every month and I have a cohort, then I'll start one earlier.
Great. Okay, and the website is Maya Midwifery, so M-A-I-A. Midwifery, M-I-D as in dog, W-I-F as in Frank, E-R-Y.com. So
yes.
That's how you can find Kristen and look at all the amazing things that are available on the website. You also have webinars, right? That people
yeah,
can take?
The best one that has made the most difference in my practice is a webinar called Timing is Everything. Mm-hmm. And it's a download, it's a 2-hour class, and since I recorded that, I've taught it for years, but since I recorded it, people are coming into the office with really great charting, and we're just able to get going immediately with excellent insemination timing. So there are other class recordings that are going to be going onto the website very soon, just getting set up with an easier delivery system before I post them all.
And then regardless of where you're practicing midwifery and what the model is, you also offer an LGBTQ cultural sensitivity course. So LGBTQ people are everywhere, as we know. So is that an in-person course or is that an online course?
It's both. I teach it here in Seattle. I traditionally have taught it as a 4-hour. It's in-depth. So there are LGBTQ sensitivity trainings for medical care providers that are going to hit your population health statistics and kind of some of the overarching details, but none of them get into what's the experience of conceiving and being pregnant as an LGBTQ person. So it's now really 6 hours is how much we really need to unpack it all and not have it feel rushed. So I'm lengthening the training. However, I can do it in 4 hours, and next month I'm going to be offering it via web to the Association of Ontario Midwives. So all midwives in Ontario are going to have access to that 4-hour training. I'm also doing a little 1-hour kind of intro section. So it will be altogether 5 hours of that 6-hour training, so just a little bit less kind of conversation than we'd have in person. But I do offer it ongoing. About every 6 months I'll offer a web-based version of that training. So it's available for midwives and doulas and anyone who works with pregnant LGBTQ families and really wants a full understanding of the experience these families are having and really wants to kind of unpack appropriate terminology and language to use. You know, it can be a beginner level or an in-depth course. It's going to meet the needs of everyone.
Amazing. So that's the workshop that you're coming to Toronto to do?
Yes and no. I'm speaking at University of Toronto International Health Program, and then, yes, I'm doing the
a little one-hour webinar for the Association of Ontario Midwives. And I'm also trying to set up a class for families, and that will hopefully be worked out by, gosh, Monday at the latest, because it's a month from now. So I'm not sure if it's going to be at 519 Health or where it's going to be, but it may be the Timing is Everything class. I also do a class called Living Fertile Lifestyles. So it'll be designed for LGBTQ families who are conceiving with donor sperm. I'm just not sure which class it's going to be and where. But okay. You can go to my Facebook page, the Maya Midwifery Facebook page, and I'll definitely be posting information about it there.
Okay, so if you're in Seattle, you're always in luck. But if you're in Toronto next month in March, you'll be in luck because Kristen will be here. So check out Maya Midwifery on Facebook.
The date will be Thursday, March 3rd.
Thursday, March the 3rd, okay. Well, we have to stop here, I think. We're almost out of time, but I really want to thank you for being my guest today, and I really want to thank you for the work that you do. It's amazing. And so needed, and I wish that I lived in Seattle when I was getting pregnant, or that you lived here. If you missed the show or you want to hear it again or you want to send it to somebody who needs to hear it, I have a whole bunch of people on my list that I want to send it to. The archives are always available at creatingfamiliesradio.com. You can download it and listen to it at your leisure. We have a Facebook group called Creating Families Community where you can join the conversation and chat about issues. We're here every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on HealthyLife.net. Kristen, thank you so much for being my guest today. I really appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, and I really wish you well with all the work that you're doing. So that's it for today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being with us. I hope you join us again next Friday, same time. And until then, bye for now.